So good morning, everybody. Yeah. As you can see from the title, yeah, we're interested in the ultra-fast electron dynamics following ionization. As Zach said yesterday, all molecules that we know have more than one electron, yeah, or neutral molecules, I would say. And if we ionize the molecule, except of H2, yeah, we'll have to deal with the electron correlation in the remaining ionic core. So that would be the main issue of the talk. So I have to say two things at the beginning. So first, there will be no pulse whatsoever during the whole discussion or talk. Yeah? So we suppose that the ionization is already over. So we have an ultra-short pulse which removes the electron, and it's already far away. And we would like to see how the system responds to this ultra-fast perturbation. So we remove nearly suddenly or suddenly remove an electron and see what are the remaining electrons or the electronic cloud of the molecule will react to this sudden perturbation.
One question.
Yeah.
If you do standard synchrotron type photonization at large photon energy, a few hundred TeV, that would apply?
That would apply, yeah. So suppose a single photon ionization with a very high energy photon, for example, that removes an electron very fast, so it's already far away from the system, doesn't interact with the ionic core, but the rest of the electrons have to do something. So. And the second point I'd like to say at the beginning is that since the processes that we're interested in are in a very short time after the ionization, so the nuclei of the molecule will be fixed. So we're dealing in this ultra short time after the ionization before the nuclear dynamics start to play a significant role. And as we see in the examples that I will show, this at least this point will not be a crude approximation. So we are talking about effects which are in a few femtoseconds. So the nuclear dynamics still will not be a big issue. Yeah. I will probably make some comments on the nuclear dynamics and show you in examples where this can and how this can perturb or interfere the picture. But all the calculations that I will present will be in fixed nuclei. So, as I said, we are interested in what will happen if we, okay, it will disappear after some time. So we remove an electron, so we create a hole in the system, and we want to see how this hole will evolve in time, whether it will stay put where it's initially created, or due to the interaction with the other electrons, it will move somehow throughout the system. So a convenient way to look at this sort of dynamics is we can define a quantity which we refer to as a hole density, which can be written in the following way. I will explain what everything is in this expression. So this is the rho is the usual one particle density operator. Phi zero is the neutral ground state of the molecule, and phi I is the initial state that we prepare by removing an electron from somewhere in the inner outer valence, doesn't matter. We prepare an initial state by removing an electron suddenly from a
system. Relaxed or not relaxed?
Pardon?
This state is not relaxed yet.
Nothing is relaxed. So, I mean, this is of course, yeah, so this is the ground state, so this part is doesn't depend on time, so this is stationary. But this second part will, since phi I is not an eigenstate of the ion, I mean it has to relax, this of course will depend on time. Yeah. So we have, let's say this, we put zero here.
Sorry, you have two different indices, phi 1 and phi n? No, it's all I.
No, yeah, I, yeah, both are I. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, phi I is this initial state that we prepare. Now this second I. Yeah, of course we can write in a usual Heisenberg picture. Zero, or it will not depend on time. Yeah. We can write that way, yeah. And since in practice, of course, we always have to compute something, so we have to represent this in a, some sort of a basis and build some sort of a matrices.
What is H now?
H is the Hamiltonian of the ion. So this is the ionic Hamiltonian, yeah.
The ion at time t equals zero.
Yeah, or the, it's time independent, yeah.
Time independent, but that's when you, when the hole was created.
This is the Hamiltonian of the okay. ionic system. So it's a full Hamiltonian, yeah?
I still don't understand what your rho zero bar is and what psi zero is.
So this is the electron density of the system, of the neutral system. So this is, before we remove an electron, this will be the ground state electron density of the system. And this is the ionic electronic density of the system after we removed an electron. And because it's phi I is, of course, not an eigenstate, that's what we want, yeah? This depends on time, so this will evolve.
So the integral of rho of r is going to be n, and the integral of rho 1 is n minus 1?
Right, yeah. Oh, okay, this is, let's see, n particles, n electron system, and this is n minus 1 state, yeah?
So H, if the molecule breaks up after the hole,
yeah,
everything is in H, contains continuum and everything, right?
So, yeah, in principle, yes, but since we are dealing with the fixed nuclei, so the system will not disintegrate, yeah, after that.
Yeah, but you can have an Auger process, for example.
Yeah, yeah, but this is there. Yeah, but it will be within the fixed nuclei, yeah, yeah.
Continuum.
Yeah, yeah, this is there, yeah.
We have no time dependence, H, no external field.
No, yeah, that's what I said at the beginning. No field. We suppose that the ionization is already over, the pulse is over. We come with a delta function pulse, and we remove an electron. So now we can have, let's say, two possibilities. Let's say one, we H we can construct within some basis is such that we can diagonalize. So if we diagonalize, the Hamiltonian will have some full set of ionic states. Yeah. Then if, then of course I can insert here resolution of identity. Yeah. Within these ionic states. Oh, no, sorry, I will insert it here. Sum over I, this is sum over j. Yeah. So then, what we'll have, this will become sum over I j. Okay, this depends only on R. So So we have something.
You already assumed that there will be no Auger processes, right?
No, I don't assume that.
Well, but when you have an integral as well.
What?
When your set of I states will also have continuum, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a full set of ionic states. Yeah, I diagonalize the ionic Hamiltonian. I have a full set.
So this sum includes integration implicitly over the continuum,
or discretized continuum. Yeah, if you want. Yeah. So this will be, let's say, x star. All right. So this is the transition moment that we have between the initial state and a certain ionic state. This will be xj. Then, of course, this is an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, so this I can write like that. This is the eigenenergy, yeah? The same here. So I can have it to the E of t I, yeah. So then the whole stuff will, okay, we can continue here. Anyway. Yeah, so this, of course, is some cosine. Yeah, let's call this omega ij. So this is the energy difference, yeah, between two states. So since I have to sum over all I and j, so this is the, and this has to be, of course, a real quantity, so the imaginary part will cancel out. Yeah. So we have some cosine here.
But these wave functions are real, so all these transition momentums are real.
Yeah, in practice, yes. But there are no restrictions to them.
Right. But then the prefactors can be complex. You can just put the sign away. But
no, I sum over all I and j. So you have here a combination ej minus ei and also ei minus ej. So when you sum this, the imaginary part will. Yeah. Because it's one is symmetric, the other is not. Okay, so if we. This is, of course, fine. We can represent something, but this is a matrix which we have to somehow analyze, and it's not so easy. So it's always good if one can put this in some sort of one-particle basis. So one can take a one-particle basis. This can be any sort of orbitals, Hartree-Fock or natural orbitals or whatever. Yeah. We work with Hartree-Fock orbitals since it's it's easier, and the Green's functions that we use afterwards are better represented. I mean, we have less terms and so on. but there are no restrictions what kind of one particle basis we choose. Yeah.
Why do we go via the density and not the wave function?
Because the wave function is difficult to. First to visualize, second to analyze.
But you could operate on wave function and finally get the density.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wonder why, what is the idea to.
No, the idea is that we want to see what the hole that we create, which is a density, will how it will evolve in time. So we can trace it in time and in space. And it's better to work with a density, which is a real quantity, and see how it evolves than with a wave function. But in principle, we have it, yeah, no doubt. So then, of course, one can represent the density operator. Okay, let's put it R. The usual representation that we will have, yeah, these are creation and annihilation operators that create or annihilate an electron from orbital pi, p or q. Yeah. When we plug this there, and after some small algebra, yeah, we can end up with the following expression for this whole density. Yeah. So it looks very much like the usual density of Hartree-Fock density, but instead of occupation numbers here, we have a full matrix, which depends on time. Yeah. So now, of course, if we diagonalize this matrix at each time point, then this can bring us to, let's say, I'll put it here. Following expression, we have so we have those which we call natural charge orbitals. They depend on time, yeah, certainly. And we have an whole occupation numbers which also depend on time. So the at each time point, the natural charge orbitals are different linear combinations of our one particle basis. And the whole occupation numbers tell us what part of the initially created charge, which is one, yeah? If we integrate this, of course, we'll always have one, so one electron is missing. It tells us what part of this initially created charge is in which natural charge orbital.
Yeah. So this is the original Q. We have,
yeah,
not
that's
just rho I, it's also rho zero. So we,
yeah, yeah, rho zero,
so
it's included in this.
Orbitals,
yeah.
Are we going to use for the calculation?
Hartree-Fock orbitals. Yeah. Well, those will be Hartree-Fock molecular orbitals.
Neutral.
Pardon? The neutral. Yeah.
For the neutral.
For the neutral.
Okay. And what is n sub pq?
That's it's a matrix, which, I mean, if you plug this in to this expression, and we can boil it down to a form like that, yeah? It's a bit lengthy.
But I have to work it through, because rho capital IJ refers to the many electron states, so you're putting then this orbital expansion in with creation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The everything is here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This, all the sums over the ionic states will be in this.
All the CI has gotten into this end of.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it's an exercise for the reader to finish it. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
And then these molecular orbitals, where are they centered? Somewhere. You just. They have an origin and you.
No, on the. They're sitting, of course, on the. I mean, you put some basis, one particle basis on your atoms.
And
then you do, yeah, and then you do a normal Hartree-Fock calculation, which gives you some sort of molecular orbitals, Hartree-Fock molecular orbitals. But in principle, you can use any. I mean, if you can do this, if you know how to represent your one particle density within this one particle basis, then I mean, you can always boil it down to something like that. And then diagonalizing this matrix at each time point will give you this.
Is it true that if your one particle basis is complete, then your final Q is completely independent of the basis you have chosen?
Yeah. That's true.
To get back to the question of Auger processes, what do you have to have? I presume that's in your ionic states. So you do another calculation to get these ionic states, and then so there will also be a projection of your neutral onto your ionic states? Or
no. So what I mean, you will see also in the examples. I have an example with a decay. Yeah. Okay. So. We use, in principle, the discrete ionic states. So the continuum, in a sense, is, I mean, it's discretized. So you have sort of a continuum that will appear. And you use those states to construct, I mean, there will be, of course, a problem of the outgoing electron, which, it's a bit tricky to.
Yeah, I understand this discretization now, but this discretized continuum will now contain one electron, right? Because the electron that
the first electron is gone.
Is gone.
Yeah.
So, but you could have an Auger process in which two electrons go out.
Yeah, we don't have it here. Yeah. I mean, we have a. This is a single. So we have a n minus one. Yeah. So we discretized, and the Hamiltonian that we have is actually we do this with the Green's functions, which have n minus one electrons. Yeah.
Do you use complex Jordan potential to discretize the continuum?
No, but so what I'll show in the example. What we did is that we tried to describe the outgoing electron as far from the system as possible without having the boundary, the absorbing boundary condition. The problem with the absorbing boundary comes from the definition of this, so we cannot use it in a straightforward way because we have these transition moments, which when you propagate, I will go to this point. So here is, I suppose that I can diagonalize the Hamiltonian, but if I cannot diagonalize the Hamiltonian, we can propagate like that. So we can use this, we take an initial state with an electron less, and then with the Hamiltonian that we have in a specific basis, we can propagate. And the question becomes that when you have n minus 2 ionic state, then, of course, this transition moment, because this will be n minus 1 over n minus 2, this will go to 0. So the whole density will go to 0. It's defined like that it's it can trace only one electron missing. But, yeah.
Yeah, can you have time dependence get in the orbital? Is that right? I'm trying to follow this through.
Yeah, I mean, you diagonalize this matrix. So you obtain some eigenvalues and some eigenvectors. And the eigenvectors, of course, will depend on time. And the eigenvectors times this will give you some sort of orbital, which also depend on time. So you have this expression.
I understand. I'm just working back, because if we're using an eigenstate representation, this is the only time dependence we have.
Yeah, the time dependence is here. Yeah.
And so I guess I'm asking, what's the time dependence of the orbital? Now mixing in two pieces, or is it still cosine omega t?
Mm-hmm. No, look, it's a full matrix. A full matrix, you diagonalize and you represent it with the eigenvectors. You have a matrix of eigenvectors.
I'm just trying to make the connection between the two expressions.
Yeah. So I mean, if you could say what the phi, how the phi tilde is related to the phi.
Yeah, that's the same question.
Okay, so.
But you have the phis or the phis, which are time independent. They're eigenstates.
So okay. So you have diagonalizing this gives you, let's call them C, T, P. and n tilde of p of t. Yeah? You have a set of eigenvectors. Yeah, when you diagonalize this. And a set of eigenvalues. So then the then if you represent your matrix like okay, yeah. So this will be the psi piece, let's say put here. You have a diagonal matrix, which is this, and you have psi q. Yeah. Yeah? You have these matrices. And then if you put this here, I mean combining this with the eigen, yeah.
One of your
signs
has to be transposed.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I wrote it like that. Yeah.
Excuse me, is it possible, am I missing something, or is it possible to write matrix N of T as some matrix which is independent of T times cosine omega ij T?
No.
It's not the energy basis, right?
I see. Ah, sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, you have their matrix like that, yeah.
Sorry, what was the answer to this question? I didn't give you an answer to this question.
To what question?
To writing the cosine omega t.
No, the cosine omega t and all the time dependent factors are somewhere in this. I mean, I can write you the full expression if you want, but. It will not help, so you have some sort of a matrix which depends on time. What's the time dependence doesn't matter. So I take this matrix at each time point and diagonalize it.
Yeah, look, you're in the eigenbasis representation and you have a time-independent Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
The only time dependence you have is exponential factors beating against one another. This is the only property going on. So that has to finally come out in your Q expression.
Of course it comes out.
That was the question. Now what's the answer?
Now he expands the axis in another basis form.
Yeah, I have another. Yeah. I have one party of it.
He expands the axis, but now he doesn't have a diagonal representation. Now if he diagonalizes this matrix. If he diagonalizes this matrix, he gets the coefficients.
Yeah.
So he transforms his single particle basis
with these coefficients.
Exactly the same you would transform the MOs from AO.
Yeah.
But it still has linear combinations of
AO. Yeah, that's what I said. Those guys are, at each time point, they are linear combinations of those guys.
Yeah. But
which are time independent, of course. So the time dependence.
If you allow me one more thing.
Sure.
Is that, can I view this, you have this creation-annihilation operator,
yeah.
A, P, Q. Isn't this equivalent to some sort of Bogoliubov transformation, which takes you from that to A dagger, tilde A dagger, and then you, I mean, this diagonalization.
No. No, this is the usual representation. I mean, if you, in one particle basis.
Yeah.
So normally you have, of course, some field operators. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this, the field operators in the one particle basis, you can show that it's, you can represent your density in the following way.
Yeah, but the NP tilde could also be some sort of a dagger tilde, a,
no.
P, which I think is equivalent to diagonalizing this matrix,
but this N contains expectation values, right, of these A's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because another confusion for me was, why don't you go to the eigenbasis of your observable? But of course, you not just have one observable, you have the difference of two expectation values. And that's why you have to first take expectation values and then diagonalize at every time step, right?
Yeah, you can see it that way. So, yeah, now we come to, if there are no more questions, I can probably proceed. I'll try not to delete something that I'll need, but anyway. So now we have to, I mean, this is a general form that you can bring this sort of quantity. So the question is how, what are these phi I, what are the, so what is this and what is this? Yeah. So we said that, I mean, if we work in a single photon, single channel, yeah, and some approximation, then this, of course, I can represent following way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Normally, it will be psi. It will be just yeah. So I take out an electron from my neutral ground state wave function, and if we stay on the Hartree-Fock picture, then of course this guy, yeah, and so in the Hartree-Fock picture, this will be already working on the Slater determinant of Hartree-Fock Slater determinant, yeah, and this will be something like a I phi zero. So these are the ionic states that I can make from if I am within the Hartree-Fock picture. Then if those two, actually one can of course then plug into the whole stuff, and one will see that this Q actually doesn't depend on time. So the hole will stay where it's initially created. And this is the Koopmans theorem. Yeah. So the only time dependence which we have comes from the correlation with the other electrons. So that we include the correlation explicitly. Yeah. Actually, for those who are interested in more detailed derivations of all this kind of stuff, you can look at JCP, Journal of Chemical Physics, for those who are not familiar with this journal. Wait a second. This is 2003. Yeah. So the derivations and how this can be shown, yeah, is you can see it there. Yeah. Now, if we said that if we don't have a correlation explicitly, nothing will happen. The charge will stay where it's created. So we have to include somehow the correlation. Then the ionic state, of course, can be. Okay, I'll put in J. Okay, for simplicity, I can write it, of course, the full, which is the correlated. Yeah. But we can stay on the normal CI picture, yeah, if you want. And this you can think of as a single determinant, but normally what we do is we do it on the full neutral ground state, which contains a correlation, of course. So you have, okay, you can put G, J, K. So we have one hole, two hole, one particle, and so forth. Yeah. So in our computations, we stop at two whole one particles, but actually we include much more than CI singles and doubles. Yeah? Just because in our case, this is through the full ground state function. Yeah, so we have sort of expansion like that. This is, for those who are not familiar, this is a so-called configuration integration interaction expansion of the ionic state. So you see you represent it in a series of successive classes of excitations. Yeah? So here we have one hole missing, here we have two holes and a particle in a virtual orbital and so forth. Yeah? Then the three hole two particles will be written in the same way. Now, let's see what we will have so if we construct the full set of ionic states, so we solve the ionic Hamiltonian, so normally what we'll have, one can obtain the ionization spectrum, yeah, which, okay, I'll put it like that. A typical ionization spectrum of a molecule will look something like that. So this is what is called pole strength. So here is one. Yeah, these are less than one. And this is the energy. So the pole strength are actually... Pardon?
You erased?
Yeah. Those... I yeah. So these are the squares of the transition moments, which correspond to. So each stick here correspond to a particular ionic state, and these are these I's, and to each I, of course, corresponds an eigenvalue. So there. The sticks are on the eigenvalue, where the height is given by the transition moment square.
So you call the known sometimes an orbital transition moment square, right?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
Well, not sort of, but just exactly.
Okay.
And there will be some continuum band which corresponds to
no.
J and
no. Actually, what you will have, so you have, because since we do this with the Green's function, so we have the full n minus 1 space, which is depending on the one particle basis that you use and you start from, you will obtain some number, I mean, which is quite big, number of ionic states. So for example, your double ionization threshold can be here, yeah, but you will have, because you have a discretized continuum. So all this, where you have a decay, normally you have many, many, many states which...
Experimentally, they would see some sort of continuous supply. If they observe
yeah.
photoelectrons...
Yeah, yeah, if the photoelectron spectra will be sort of... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in your picture, all these bars are sharp, yeah?
Yeah.
Delta function line.
Yeah, 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 delta function.
No, there is a misunderstanding, I see. Auger begins very far. So double... above the double ionization threshold. All levels below the double ionization are discrete.
Discrete, yeah.
In a true molecular photoelectron spectrum,
you have a vibrational structure and so on. So the broadening of this comes from the, yeah, from the vibrational broadening with the, when you have a molecule. Yeah. So in a Hartree-Fock picture, or in a Koopman's theorem picture, this will be, of course, the one particle energies, yeah, let's put it I, like that, and those will be equal to one. Yeah, so we will have as many sticks as the occupied orbitals we have, and just the sticks start going up to one, because the transition moments there are one.
So to clarify about the Dyson order, what actually is the symbol on the left in your transition moment squared?
This is, as I said, this is, you have now, if you think of in CI, this is the graph.
Then I can't see it at all.
Okay, I'll write it here for you. Yeah. So you remove an electron from a particular orbital I, yeah, an occupied orbital I. I use the convention that I, J, K, and so forth are occupied orbitals, A, B, C, D, and so forth are virtual, and P, Q are general indices. So you remove an electron.
That's what I was getting at, that this is actually the correlated.
Yeah, and this is of course a correlated. So the overlap is only on the one hole. So what is missing is actually two hole, one particle, and so forth.
It's only a notational question, not a physics question. You keep switching between saying Koopmans and then saying, but we really do a correlated.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
That's what I want to find out about. That's all.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm happy. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Actually, you can always boil it down to something like that, yeah? Because this psi you also can represent like that,
right,
and so forth.
Then everything gets mixed up badly.
Okay.
And the nice thing about what you're doing is, I'll comment later on.
Okay, so as I said, if we don't include correlation, we will have this sort of stick spectrum, yeah, which will correspond to each orbital, each of those occupied orbital. We will have one stick going up to one. Yeah, so we have only one hole contributions. We will have as many sticks as occupied orbitals. Yeah. When we include correlation, of course, those guys, what is missing here, to one, yeah, is those terms, which are two or further up, yeah, two whole one particles and so on. So this is the terms which describe the correlation. So in a sense, other states are picked up intensity from the main state here.
But there is a Koopman's theorem that center of gravity will be at the same sort of one particle line. If you take center of gravity of this main line and these satellites, it will be still the same.
Yeah.
They add up to unity, but center of gravity stays in one particle line.
Yeah. This is, in a sense, you try to represent everything you think within a one particle picture. At some point here, yeah, what we call a breakdown of molecular orbital picture, you are no longer able to think of a one particle picture. So because those can be the contributions from the same one whole configuration. So in a sense, this will be completely destroyed, and you cannot say that my removing an electron from a particular orbital will give me this state or the other state. So you have a full salad of many, many states here. Yeah. Okay, the point that I want to make here is that usually, as I said, this is a typical ionization spectrum of a molecule. So usually those states in the outer valence, yeah, are fairly well represented with a single one-hole configuration. So if we, they can, okay, probably not the right color. This will be something like that. So let's say yellow is a particular psi 1. Yeah. So that's why in most of the cases, the Koopman's theorem works pretty okay. So what the correlation will add here is some shift normally, yeah, to those states. But going deeper, we can encounter a situation where we have two states. I will use a different color again. Yeah. No, it's not. Anyway, okay, I'll try with red or pink. Yeah.
What is E? It's photoelectron energy or energy of the states?
What?
On the x-axis.
Energy ionization potential. This is IP. What I said, green. So we encounter situations where we have two ionic states, I and J, yeah, which are a combination of two one-hole configurations.
You don't have to go very deep. If you just take butadiene,
I know,
G0
yeah.
and G1 are this character.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a remark.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have an example like that, yeah, where we have already this in the outer valence. Yeah. So then in this case, we'll have, let's say, two states which can be, I'll put approximately, represented in the following way, Ci plus Cj Cj So these are one-hole configurations, I have in mind. Yeah. This is removing an electron. I'll put it like that, yeah. A particular electron, yeah. I or J, from orbital I, yeah. or J. So if we have only, of course, only those two states, they have to be orthonormal. So we can have, we can put it like that. Yeah, where, yeah. So then, of course, all the things there can be done analytically, yeah. And the matrix that caused so many problems will look like that. Okay, here we'll be, have the same term. So this will be the matrix. Yeah?
It's 2 by 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I have only two orbitals. So yeah, if I diagonalize it, I obtain this IJ, which now look like that. So minus 1/2 square root of 1 minus yeah, so I have two whole occupation numbers, which let's say I and J are plus or minus here. So what I'll have if I plot those occupation numbers, these are in tilde. I have one, and this is time. So at the beginning, let's say I start with an electron missing from orbital I. Yeah? So I'll have at time zero, this will be an I, and it will oscillate like that. And the other one will be, of course, so this will be, let's say, an I tilde. This is nj tilde. So what's happening? So at time zero, as I said, those Hall occupation numbers, so I and j tilde, they correspond to some natural charge orbitals phi I j, they depend on time, and phi I at time zero tilde, we can take if we take this, so this is the initial state, this will be exactly, let's say, the Hartree-Fock orbital. And Cj of zero tilde will be Cj. But then, as time proceeds, we see that this natural charge orbital, or the natural charge orbital phi tilde I, will lose the occupancy, so the hole is gone, and the other one will be gained. So the hole goes from this orbital to this orbital. Here, actually, this point, we have an avoided crossing, which means that the character of these two orbitals are swapped. So we start with something which is exactly at time zero, which is exactly the Hartree-Fock, let's say, orbitals. And then it proceeds, they go as a linear combination of the two, phi, phi j, with some coefficients, and this also, but it starts from phi j, and in this point they are swapped. So actually, phi, the charge continues to be removed or to flow from orbital phi I to phi j and vice versa. So this will have a perfect oscillations here, so both of them will go to one and minus one.
It will never stop.
It will never stop,
And what will be the Q of T? It's not physical. Q is physical, right?
In a sense, yes.
It depends on the choice of your basis, but Q is observable.
So now you can imagine that if you have a molecule, something like that, and your phi I is localized here and phi j localized here, then what we will have and what this process will describe will be oscillations of the charge from here to here. With a time period, which is, of course, depends on...
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
So with the omega, of course, which is the period of oscillation, the frequency, is actually the energy spacing here.
So as we're going on forever, of course, when you bring in vibrations and other stuff.
It will put other things. Actually, in the realistic examples, this I wrote here approximately, and you can solve this when this is equal. But actually, you have many, many other states which have a small coupling, of course, to those two. I mean, this part which is missing is somewhere here. And this will introduce an additional...
Here you plot just n. You plot n of t. Mm-hmm. So p of t. Is this what you're plotting here?
Yeah, this is time.
So, what about the orbital phi tilde sub p of r of t?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Are you going to look at this now also? Because in general, these will be functions of time. My question is, I guess, in this... Where you have just two holes, single particle holes interacting, what is the time dependence look like?
So you have the following. This phi tilde some coefficients. Let's put it I of t.
A little small, right?
Okay. Okay, this I can't remove. That's big enough. C, J, and if I tilde J is the same, yeah?
This kind of relates to the question that the density is the real thing, not these pieces, but so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, so like what will happen, as I said, so at time zero, this will be exactly phi I, yeah? So this will be, this coefficient will be zero and this will be one. As time proceeds, they will share some weight till more or less this point when there will be 50-50 here and 50-50 here, yeah, those coefficients.
So it'll just reflect the...
Then what I said, when we have an avoided crossing, this actually will, the character of those will be changed. So let's say at the beginning this one is more phi I and less phi j, and after this point, yeah, here, will be more phi j than phi I, up to this point where it will be exactly phi j. That's what I said here.
You're saying both the n and the orbital contain this, so I'm a little confused. The n is already shifting the populations.
Yeah.
And now the c's are also shifting the populations.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the populations are.
That's why I thought that this is a fairly simple example that one can see. So what I said is, in practice, what we will see in this particular case will be if you have a molecule where the two orbitals are, let's say, localized on the two ends of the molecule, then the initial hole will be localized, let's say, here, and as time proceeds, it will oscillate between here and here. You'll have an oscillation of the charge. So if I plot this...
You know something we don't know, which is the phase of the C's relative to the phase of the N's. That's kind of the missing piece in my understanding of what's happening here.
No, so... So
I'm the only one that doesn't understand, as usual.
Well, I wanted to phrase my question a little differently. Take a simple molecule like O2, a homonuclear case, where the molecular orbitals will have G and U symmetry, right? So how does your treatment bear on the question, for instance, of hole localization? Will these two orbitals you're talking about, will they be the G and U orbitals that are almost degenerate?
If it happens to that they are coupled like that, it can be. But it depends on how they're. I mean, the coupling is from what we have. If you have states, yeah, the orbitals is something that you like to think of as a picture. But actually, you have states. These are ionic states which can be coupled via this is a so-called hole mixing. So you have, let's say, it can be more holes, of course, that are coupled. Many more states can be coupled. But if you have the simple case when you have two states which are coupled via these two one-hole configurations, depending on how you start, yeah, you can start from here. So that's what you will observe. So you'll have an oscillations between, let's say, those two orbitals.
Particular example, you can only mix orbitals of particular symmetry.
Yeah, here yes.
So
yeah.
G and U
will not, so they cannot couple directly like that, but they can couple via, let's say, a two-hole one particle, yeah.
So, I mean, does that mean you can't see hole localization in a homonuclear case, this formalism?
What do you mean I cannot see hole localization?
What do you mean by hole localization?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at least some experiments...
There's no hole localization without... continue. So either you have vibrations, so you have the breakup of some point, then you can localize, and he, if it's time, maybe you can get there, but it's not here. But of course, or you have a continuum that something like an electron is leaving, else you cannot localize because of energy conservation. If you move something, it has some energy, like Anatoly said, in principle, the Koopman energy, more or less, and then something happens. The question is what happens, and this is what.
But he's only removing from one orbital, whereas I
guess... Yeah, I can start with a linear combination.
You remove G and U.
But you can remove as you like, in principle, but then it's getting very complicated. And the easiest to think is what happens for each orbital. And if you know that, you can combine as you like. So if you would be able to remove from the O2, according to your question, from the left side, he can start with the left side and see what happens. So the left will flop to the right and go across. If you now remove from a G orbital, like it will usually be the case in normal ionization, you remove from, let's say, from the G orbital, there will be no hole mixing with the U orbital, but there will be other many body effects, which you didn't explain yet, which will mix in also the U orbital. So there will be a mixing, but the G symmetry will be preserved.
I see. Okay, this helps.
Yeah. Okay, so then then going further down or deep in the shell, we have situations where we have, let's say, these satellites. So we have a main state and a satellite, which is, the big part which is missing here is actually a two-hole one-particle configuration or configurations, yeah. So it means that this is a hole plus an excitation. And so for the experimentalists, I think, like to call this shake-up. But these are actually, in our language, these are main states, which contains most of the intensity. And this is the satellite. So in this case, if we take a main line and a satellite, we can do exactly the same. The difference will be that here, one will have what I said, BJA. Yeah. So this is a two-hole one particle, which is, phi BJK is A dagger B A J A K on my ground state. It's a two-hole, so this is creating a particle in the virtual orbital, and this is removing two electrons from occupied orbitals. So that's the notation what I use here. So we have B J K, exactly the same case. In I suppose that all of those are different, so I is different from J and K, the so-called correlation satellites. So in this case, this matrix which I removed will be 4x4. We have four orbitals, but it will be diagonal. And then the Ni tilde will look like that. 1 minus 2 alpha beta square, and the usual 1 minus cosine omega t, and nj will be equal to nk, which will be minus nb, which will be what? 2 times alpha beta square 1 minus cosine omega t. So this will be the four occupation numbers, whole occupation numbers that we will have. So more or less we'll have the same picture here. It's just that, we'll have Ni, we'll have the generates Nj and then K here. So one more line. Plus a negative hole, which is a particle. Yeah? This is an electron in a virtual orbital, an excited time. So we have one, the initial hole starts to lose occupancy. We open two more holes, yeah, which start to gain, and an electron.
Because
two more holes, yeah.
It's total two hole, one particle, you're probably.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
You have three holes?
No.
No.
But what one can actually.
Two holes, one particle.
Yeah, yeah. So we have two holes and one particle.
You said three holes.
Yeah, we have an initial hole. This is, we have an initial plus, yeah, look how the two states are written. So this is a correlation satellite. I can have a situation where this is I, where this will not move. Yeah? This will stay like that.
Well, in this case, you're thinking of one of the holes as a Koopman hole, right?
I start like that. But I can start, in principle, with a linear combination. Yeah, I can start with anything.
Yeah, it's a matter of jargon. If you start with a Koopman hole, then these are not correlation effects that the quantum chemists refer to. These
why?
Orbital relaxation.
No, no, no. You have okay. When I say correlation, okay, yeah, we can argue, of course. When I say correlation, I include both relaxation and correlation. What the usual quantum chemists call correlation and relaxation. So both effects are included here. Yeah, if I have a situation as I said here, when one of the holes, yeah, one of the holes in the two-hole one-particle configuration is the same as the initial hole, this will describe the relaxation. This is the orbital relaxation effect. So this will give me a so-called relaxation satellite. I can distinguish between both. What give me the correlation and relaxation, but now when I say correlation, I include both. I include something that the electrons communicate to each other, and there are some effects which are coming from that.
But what one would see experimentally, because these satellite spectra they observe, they people can see them in photoelectron.
Yeah.
This beating or time effects, they are they observable?
We hope so.
Yeah. You have to construct an experiment when you time dissolve on this time scale. The time scale.
Yeah, the time scale you can imagine. So the time scale are more or less. I mean, it depends on this energy spacing, which in the typical cases is EV or less than an EV. So it means femtosecond.
What would you look for? What would one measure?
If I'm afraid that I will not have time to go to this point, but so in one of the possibilities that people want to think of doing some sort of experiment is if I have, let's say, a molecule, which I have exactly this kind of effect, yeah? It jumps from one end to the other. So I start with creating a hole here, and the hole oscillates within few femtoseconds. Yeah, what we have is few femtoseconds. So then if experimentally one is able to align those molecules, yeah, and create a localized hole here, then one can use also high harmonic generation. So when the electron comes back, it will the high harmonic spectrum will depend on whether the hole is already here or here. So I can use this recollision time as a clock.
So you mean high harmonic generation produced by the molecule that has the hole?
Yeah.
And so you want, by looking at the high harmonic generation, to resolve in time what
no,
is,
I can,
this,
if,
this,
if, look.
This back and forth between,
I mean, this is sort of what I can say, because all the experimentalists which come to me say what we can measure. I mean, the other way, of course, is to use some sort of pump probe.
Okay,
yeah.
That I understand now.
Yeah. If you then you can come with a second pulse which will probe, which can disintegrate, for example, the system or address a specific excitation, which leads to a different disintegration of the system. Then, depending on the time delay, one can see whether the hole is already here or not.
So there has to be a pulse and a frequency such that is sensitive to which hole
yeah.
does something to.
I'm not saying that it's easy, but yeah. And the third one, which we think now, is that this oscillation here, which of course will last more or less, let's say 50 and 20 femtoseconds before the nuclear dynamics actually blocks it, yeah, because it can trap the hole in one of the two sides. This is an oscillating charge. And an oscillating charge emits radiation. So we can...
This is unique.
And this is an infrared.
Yeah. But the simplest experiment, simply quotation marks, of course, would be that let's assume you prepared your state and then it oscillates, that you do core excitation spectroscopy in a delayed, in a well-defined delay. And core will take a core electron and try to put it in the hole. If the hole is there, you can put it. If it's not there, you cannot. So right. You will have no signal. And in this way, because core excitations are from a given core, let's say one is a carbon and one is nitrogen as an example, so you are totally different energies. So you see whether the carbon hole is there, whether the hole is above the carbon in the valence or not.
Yeah, but when you see, you see, then you have to tell me what you will look for to see when.
The absorption from the core. The absorption from a core level, let's say carbon 1s, to where you created originally the hole, let's say some pi orbital on sitting on that carbon. Right. So you try to make this excitation, okay? And if the hole is there, you can do it. If the electron has returned, you cannot because it's blocked. So you will see in the absorption spectrum, absorption or no absorption is a function of delay. So this is a possibility that people think they can do, or will be able to do with this new reality.
There's one small problem. There's one small problem.
No, many problems.
The small problem being that the duration of your cold pulse will have to be shorter than the oscillation time, which means it will be very broad bandwidth, which means it will access everything in the vicinity.
No. Think about it. Carbon edge from nitrogen edge.
If you use a core hole, then it's clear that you are far off with any pulse. Yeah.
Even let's say if he has an oscillation of let's say 3 or 4 femtoseconds, it's sufficient to be something like half a femtosecond. You already see something. So if you half a femtosecond is very very narrow in energy. Half a
femtosecond is a big now.
Yeah.
If you move an electron from down.
It's a hundreds of EV difference. So. Okay, the last point in the spectrum that I wanted to point out is when you go even deeper and you have sort of a salad like that. So if in principle this, of course, if it's above the double ionization threshold, normally this describes a decay in our picture. So if we had an infinite basis, of course, this will boil to some sort of Lorentzian, giving us the time scale of the decay. But it can be that this is just due to a very strong correlation, which also can have a similar structure. Yeah. So if one does this with the Lorentzian, of course, represent you have an integral over many, many states here. Yeah? Or if it's a full function, then you have an integral over the sum. So then, of course, I will show examples, but normally in this picture, the initial hole will just decay exponentially. So this will be tau. let's put it alpha tau, some factor. And what the others will do will depend on where we are. If we are above the double ionization threshold, so we can have sort of Auger decay, we will have something that two more holes will open and an electron will be promoted to to a continuum in a sense, but we don't have a real continuum, which it will mean many, many excitations for electrons further and further. If of course this, sorry? Yeah. Here, of course, we don't lose an electron. This will be, if we include an absorbic boundary, then we can think of something. But as I said, mentioned in the beginning, there is a problem of
occupation of CN. So originally filled, so will it go back?
No, what we'll have is that if you propagate long enough, yeah, because you don't, I mean, the electron never leaves the system, it just goes up and up, and then it continues to interfere with the others, we can have some sort of, yeah. It depends on, because you have here many, many, many states, so it depends how many virtual orbitals you have in order to describe this as far as possible. But, yeah. Yeah, so if the decay is fast, which is usually the case, yeah, in the Auger or what I will show, an ICD, yeah, this is orders of femtoseconds, so it's this one can reproduce with the basis set. Yeah. I mean, Gaussian basis. Okay, so as I said a couple of times, this was more to show you that if one can diagonalize the Hamiltonian, one can use those states and eigenenergies and so on. But if one cannot, of course, unfortunately, yeah, I deleted it, but we'll head, I'll try to hurry up a bit, because we are. Okay, doesn't matter. We had a term like that. So one can try to directly propagate using the Hamiltonian, so one will have phi I of t. Yeah. Then what we normally do is, because as I said, we do this with Green's functions method, or more specifically the so-called ADC schemes, which stands for algebraic diagrammatic construction scheme. So it's a sort of a matrix representation of the Green's function, which there are two forms which we use. We have the so-called Dyson form, where one solves explicitly or solves perturbatively the Dyson equation or the expansion of the self energy. And what is used in the direct propagation is the so-called non-Dyson schemes, where one uses a nice partitioning one can have in the Green's function represented in the so-called irreducible states, or this is the irreducible state representation. I can give you a reference on this non-Dyson stuff if you want. So this is Johann Schirmer. And what was G? And it's again JCP P109473498. So then in the non-Dyson scheme, one can, because the normal Green's function, of course, in the Dyson representation will have n minus 1 and n plus 1, so it can describe electron affinity also. So we have ionization part and affinity part. And in through the Dyson equation or through the perturbation expansion, those two blocks are coupled, so one usually has a bigger space to deal with. But in the non-Dyson scheme, the n minus 1 and n plus 1 space can be completely separated. And with those states, they are actually constructed as a successive classes of excitation like that. So we have one hole, two hole, one particles, and so on, classes of excitation. So in principle, one can use those as a full basis. And insert in here and here, and we will have a one particle operator represented in this basis, and then the representation also in this basis of the propagated initial state. So that's what we're doing. For the propagation, we use Lanczos propagation. For those who are interested in those details, you can see. And Glenn Cederbaum, it's again JCP 23044111 2005. So there is how the propagation is done and so on. Yeah. So that was more or less the theoretical part. Now I can go to some explicit examples, realistic examples. So the first guy that I want to show you is, there was a stick somewhere or a pointer. Okay, so this is some guy which consists of two glycines plus some N-terminal. Yeah, for the chemists, they probably can give it the name. I don't. So this is the spectrum. Actually, the system is planar, so we have a symmetry plane over here. So we have two irreducible representation, two different symmetry states. So only one of the symmetries are plotted here. So there are some states missing from the other symmetry. Anyway, so what I will show is this the inner valence. So we're concentrated on these three states here, which are coupled via this mechanism that I explained here. Yeah, this is the whole mixing case. So I don't know how good you see, but the green, blue, and the red correspond to different one-hole configurations. So these are electrons missing in particular orbitals, three different orbitals of this guy. So this is, again, the two-hole mixing, but you can imagine how it's with the three-hole. So that's how the occupation numbers look like. Yeah? We have more or less like this idealized picture that I showed here, and oscillations. Here we have three holes, so we have more or less three periods, or so three different energy differences which are involved, or two, actually. But we have many, many more others, because we have many more states which we couple. So this salad here, the red is actually the other symmetry. So these are hole occupation numbers corresponding to the other symmetry.
May I ask you something?
Yeah.
What will be oscillating? Let's look at this picture, I and J.
You'll see in the next picture. What?
Okay, so the colors will be missing, the relative coloring, or the height of these two lines? Will
so
be
the relative coloring will be is the height, is actually the one hole, the contribution of the particular one hole configuration, which means an electron missing from a particular orbital.
So the coloring will be oscillating, or the height?
Everything, yeah. But, I mean, these are static, these are eigenstates. So the representation what we have is within these eigenstates. In the eigenstates picture, of course, nothing moves. Yeah. But Yeah. So nothing will oscillate in this picture. This is static. This is eigenstates of the cation.
So the reason you don't have sinusoidal behavior there is because you have more than two states.
We have many, many states. Yeah. These are, in this particular example, I think that something like 50 or more correlated electrons.
How many?
50 or so. 50. Yeah. So this is a multi-electron wave packet propagation.
The top lines which go up, the black ones?
Yeah, the black ones, so we start with a hole in a particular orbital, and then here we have this avoided crossing. Yeah. This goes down, the other goes up, and it oscillates with some period. Yeah. These are particle hole excitations. Yeah, and they actually describe the correlation effects in the cation. So irrespective of where you remove an electron, even if it's from the HOMO, you will have this kind of stuff here. The hole will stay more or less where it's created, with small oscillations here around 1, and we'll have this salad which describes the correlation effect in the cation. So we always have.
So although you have more than two states coupled there, still it looks a lot like sine cosine, which means that a coupling of two states is one that dominates, and the rest are.
You see, there. Well, probably you don't see. There are small things which are missing here and also here. But even if you take only these three states, there are parts, I mean, which are in black, which actually means that these are coming from other one-hole configurations. Yeah, because what is here in the spectrum are only one-hole configurations. What is missing up to one are two-hole one-particle part. Yeah.
I have something more, but I'll wait until the end.
Okay. So this how this Q guy, the hole density will look like. So at the beginning, the hole, it will be more or less localized on this left-hand side of the system. Yeah, and you can see these are snapshots. Yeah, the time, 6 femtoseconds. Yeah, it will be more or less entirely on the other side. Then it goes back and forth. Yeah.
So that's the whole thing.
Yeah, this is the big Q. Yeah. This is the hole density. So this represents a hole.
There's no dephasing mechanism except phonons which are not taken into account.
No.
Why is there no
correlation?
There is correlation.
It can be a dephasing, but it takes some time. It's built in.
Okay.
Because it's a full many body Hamiltonian for the ion. So the outgoing electron is forgotten. It's a finite system. You should not forget
the finite. many states.
But it's many
states.
So you see, many states can act as a reservoir.
They don't do it on that time scale too much. Maybe you can go briefly back.
Yeah,
you see, there are lots of states.
This is up to 40.
But the ionization, there are others which, and the other symmetry. Also, but they lead to all kinds of fluctuations. Maybe you should. You see, it's not
the red is the other symmetry. We have it's a CS symmetry, so you have a symmetry plane, so you can have two irreducible representations that don't couple. Yeah. So this is A prime, and this is A double prime.
This molecule has hydrogen atoms. Distribution does this equivalent.
Yeah.
There are hydrogens. So yeah. If your vibrations be propagate for a long time.
Okay, the hydrogen vibrations are somewhere here, around 10 seconds. Yeah.
But it will dephase more and more.
The hydrogens are not, I mean, we checked, of course, with different configurations of hydrogens. The hydrogens, it's not so, I mean, the vibration of the hydrogens will not, it will not, I mean, you will have a bit different picture, but not, I mean, the general behavior will be there. What matters is, I can show in the next example, okay. So this is some other guy, which we call Mi Penna, And what is shown above, so this is outer valence. So the Hartree-Fock picture or the Koopmans theorem will give you this. So you have two orbitals, this one and this one, I don't know how good you see the green. I now see that it's not very visible, but anyway, yeah, so there is a line here, and this is, yeah, so this is purely Koopman. So you solve a Hartree-Fock equations, and you obtain things like that. So these are two different conformers. In the next slide, you'll see more what's the difference in the two conformers. So the Hartree-Fock picture between the two conformers doesn't change much. Yeah, you have a slight shift here and here, but it's, yeah, within more or less the error that you have. So if you do this with the full many-body calculation, so this is ADC3, so correct up to third order of perturbation theory. So then you have these two states, which are, okay, they're shifted, yeah, but what is important, they are mixed. Yeah, you see exactly this picture that is shown over there. So the green, the contribution from a hole from the green guy in this particular state is that side, and this is in the other, and the blue, I mean the contribution from this guy is shown in blue. And this is for one of the conformers. This is the lowest in energy conformer of this guy in particular. The other conformer, yeah, Hartree-Fock, nothing changes more or less, but here, so you have change, but actually because of the symmetry, you have purely, I mean, each of the two states is more or less 100% built from a single one-hole configuration. So the difference in this Q, now Q, what is plotted here, is Q only one of, let's say, Z axis, and X and Y are integrated. This is time, and this is what we call molecular axis, which is more or less something which goes like that. Yeah? So
it's a straight line along the backbone or something?
Yeah, look, this is because the Hartree-Fock part of the calculation we use GAMES UK code, it orients the molecule somehow. Yeah. So in this,
yeah. What you're doing, I want to know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. So as I said, the
what's Z?
Z in this case is an X which passes more or less like that.
Straight line.
A straight line. Yeah. You have X, Y, and Z. So the other two are integrated here in this picture. But here you can see more the difference between the two conformers. So what is difference is that this is twisted. Yeah. And you see a completely different picture. So in one case, you start with a hole which is localized on the chromophore, yeah, which was this, yeah, here. You start here, and you end up here, yeah, because you have this hole mixing. Okay. So you have a perfect oscillation. Almost of the entire charge goes from the chromophore to this N terminal. So here's an N atom, more or less. And oscillates back and forth between, as you see, it's 4 femtoseconds. Huh? And in the other conformer, so that's why I said it's very sensitive to the nuclear dynamics also, you don't see anything. I mean, the charge stays more or less where it's created. There are small oscillations due to the coupling to the other states, but practically nothing happens. So this is out of balance for those who asked whether, yeah, and Sergei pointed out that their system, of course, where you have strong correlation effects in, yeah. Now I want to briefly say something on the decay, yeah. Sorry. So what we have here is the following system. So we have neon, argon, cluster, it's, sorry. 3.5 angstrom is the equilibrium distance of this cluster. So what we have here, I will write it in a usual chemical notation. So this is 2s, this is 2p.
Cluster means a diamond? Or?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 So we have, yeah, the core, you have core, of course, yeah? So this is the outer balance, or this is actually inner balance. So what happens here if we ionize the neon 2s, so we create a hole here. If the neon is alone, nothing can, I mean, what can happen is that an electron from here can fall and emit a photon. So the double ionization, the OJ, is forbidden from here. Energetically, it's not possible. But if we have a neighbor, then what can happen is, again, an electron can fall and fill this vacancy, but the energy is already sufficient to eject an electron from the argon. So we have, so finally we will have muon plus 2s, sorry, 2p minus 1, argon 3p minus 1. Of course, this will explode afterwards. Yeah, plus an electron, of course, yeah. Here it is, the guy.
Argon plus.
Okay. Yeah, okay, of course. Yeah. So we start with an inner valence hole here, and you eject an electron from. So this is what we try to describe, yeah? Also how it evolves in time. So this is what we get in applying the more or less the same methodology. So here are these hole occupation numbers that I presented. So the black guy represents the hole in the 2s, muon 2s. The red one is a muon 2p. The green guy is a argon 3p, and the blue is the electron. So we see exactly this, what I said. Yeah. Be careful, this is an attosecond. This is the first 100 attosecond blown up. Yeah. If one is interested, I can make a comment on this afterwards. So the muon 2s is filled, the battery is going, okay, yeah, then which is filled by the muon 2p, so this is this part, and then an argon 3p is open and an electron goes to continue. So this is exactly this process. So how the density looks like, it's again integrated. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So this is how the density looks like. Yeah, you start with an S vacancy on neon, so this is this bell shape like here. And then as time proceeds, this goes to this 2-rich surface, which means actually a 2pz, yeah, because this is the z-axis between the neon and the argon. And this is how the hole is open on the other side. So this is again, these two humps correspond to the 3pz. So this is the fastest channel that we have. It's a pz goes here and pz goes out. Of course, we have all other combinations from x and y. Yeah, have more channels. So those build up at later time. So you can even see how the different channels open. So this, the small ridge here, which goes up and becomes more important after, let's say, 40 femtoseconds, are the contributions from the other channels. So we saw that more or less it's the fastest channel, and we have this also with the static calculations, is about 35 femtoseconds. So the process takes about 35 femtoseconds. So now you can see why it can always overcome the photon emission from the neon, because this is in nanosecond regime. Yeah.
This is basically some exponential decay.
Yeah, right? But they are because you have different channels. That's why it's not a perfect.
The wiggles have to do with what?
The wiggles have to do with the coupling of the many, many channels and the fact that we take out instantaneously an electron from a particular Hartree Fock orbital. So
it has to do with the fact that you have finite and relatively small number of channels, right? Because if you had an infinite number of channels, it would be smooth, right?
No, would not say so. No. No, no, it can't.
Both of them are discrete.
Yeah.
It's only very high up where there is something more smooth. Mm-hmm. So the first states are shake-up states or whatever you create also by taking out sudden electron, and they are discrete. So what you see are this energy, discrete energy difference between the level you have taken out and the shake-up. So
yeah,
it's not this smooth.
So how do you prevent it from repeating?
We just, so what we did in this particular example, We put a lot of bases in the middle just to describe the bonding, because it's a van der Waals system, which is not very easy to describe the bonding. Yeah, and we try to get the outgoing electron by putting distributed Gaussian functions so around the system. And I think that there were something like 6, 7 in each direction, yeah? where the positions and the exponents of the Gaussians were obtained such that they fit the outgoing Coulomb wave seeing two positive charges at the center with the energy of 9 eV, which we know that is the energy of the outgoing electron.
Okay,
so this is the radial part of the...
how you describe the outgoing electron. Yeah. I'm asking how you prevent it from coming back.
I don't prevent it. If I propagate long enough, it will come back. It will come back, yeah. It's more or less saturated like that till I think 55 femtoseconds or so, and then at 60 something it starts to go back. Yeah, that's what I said here. That you, yeah.
But I mean, you some physical dynamics you have to think
what
about.
What you can, I mean, we try to describe the outgoing. This is an S. Yeah, this was S.
Yeah, cool. Let the electron come back. But you yeah. really want to look at dynamics.
Yeah, yeah. So we tried to describe the Coulomb wave up to 15 angstroms outside the system. So, yeah. And since it's fast and the electron is not very fast, so the electron is 9 eV, so it doesn't oscillate too much, this you can do, yeah. For UJ, of course, you cannot use that. I mean, the electron will oscillate like crazy and, yeah, you cannot do this. Okay, what I have here? Ah, yeah, then I want to, oh, nothing is seen here. Sorry for that, yeah. Here you could see, yeah. I will try, okay, I will try to see whether.
So are there any measured PES on these things?
Pardon?
He measured photoelectron spectra on these.
Oh yeah, the ICD is measured. I mean, the only thing which is not measured and still is there are several groups which want to measure is to see ICD in real time. But ICD, as in effect, was measured by many, many groups. Yeah, or well, not so many groups, but many, many times. Yeah. In neon 2, in big neon argon clusters, in argon clusters.
I'm just talking about the PES
of this one in particular.
Not the
I thought that, okay, I still have some, probably this is better. I think so, yeah. No. Sorry. Why doesn't it? Yeah. Ah, you see it better, okay. Not this part, but at least the other part. Okay, somehow the ghost view, the PS file is better. Anyway, what I wanted to point out here is, again, the questions how this can be measured or verified that this effect really exists. This is a particular, yeah, again, a different guy. I took always different examples just to show that it's not a very isolated case. I mean, it's not that it's happened in every molecule, but we have a number of molecules where one can observe this effect of oscillations. So this is for the chemist, is called M-methylacetamide. Yeah, it looks like that. The red are oxygens, these are carbons and nitrogen. Yeah. So here we have again an inner valence hole mixing case. So there are two states which if the colors were seen better, you'll see that you have a strong hole mixing between two cases. So this is, if you take only those two states and make this simple model with the energy difference between this, you will get these perfect oscillations. So what you get when you do the full, take the full many-body Hamiltonian and do the full calculation is this black guy over there. So you see the wiggles and so on comes from the coupling of the other states. So how Oh, I think that I had a... Yeah, sorry about that. I thought that I put also the picture of how the hole oscillates, yeah? But it's again, here you have to believe me, it's something which goes from more or less here, yeah, to here. So it's a hole jumping like that, yeah? With this period. So these are the I and J orbital that are involved. Yeah? So then, if I compute the dipole moment that we can do, and yeah, unfortunately you don't see the green somehow. So the green is the Y component, yeah, just because, as I said, the Games UK orients molecule, the molecule such that you never can control this. So, but these are the three components of the dipole moment. So this is in atomic units, and this is time to 20 in femtoseconds, or to 20 femtoseconds. So the oscillations are, as you see again, with this few femtoseconds, and you have, and the Z, the Z component is missing. So one, of course, can do a Fourier transform of the second time derivative of the dipole moment, and that's the spectrum that we will obtain. So be careful. Now, I still have some time to make some comments. So. This is the energy, yeah, omega, in atomic units. And this is the spectral intensity, or the power of the emission, also in atomic units. So the big oscillations that we saw, yeah, are actually those small guys over there. Yeah? It's only this part. All the rest, which is, as you see, around two atomic units, or yeah, between one and three atomic units. This is XUV already, or UV. Yeah? And these are pretty sharp and big. Yeah, they come, of course, if you look from these small wiggles over there. So the big period was this small stuff, which is the real emission that we think that one can observe. Yeah. And those are coming from these small wiggles. So where these small wiggles come from? They come from the coupling to the many, many states, which I said that they are very far from your initial state. Yeah? These are attosecond oscillations, more or less. And they come from, because these states, as I said, there are some small parts which are missing, and they can be very far in energy. Actually, if you ionize, you come with a specific energy. So you come, for example, here, and you ionize everything here, so you cannot populate all those small contributions over there. Those small contributions over there comes from the fact that we start from a particular Hartree-Fock orbital at the beginning, which means that we come with a delta function pulse, which means infinitely brought in energy, so we can populate all those states, and they contribute to our picture. All those states, yeah, they also come from the fact that at time zero, we don't have any correlation, in a sense. We are so fast that we are faster than the electron correlation. So the electron correlation also has some specific time.
All the solutions are an artifact, that's what you're saying.
Not really. If you are able to prepare a state like that, yeah, if you're able to make a delta function pulse, that's what you'll see. Yeah. So it means that if you... Yeah?
Have you finished with it?
Yeah.
Okay. You have coupled many states.
Yeah.
Now, if you have Auger there, this is a dumping.
Yeah, I'm talking now when I'm in the regime, which is, let's say, this is the double ionization threshold, so Auger starts from somewhere here. Yeah. And I'm talking about the coupling between those two states.
Sure.
But those two states, of course, are coupled to many, many others,
right,
which are further up in the energy. And those I cannot populate by just coming, let's say, with a photon, with an energy here. I can populate everything here, depending on the cross-section, of course, yeah, how I will populate them, but I will populate only this part. I will not have energy to populate the rest.
Okay.
And but now damping due to nuclear motion.
This will come. Yeah, that's why we more or less can.
Time scale of that.
It depends. Let's say the hydrogen oscillation in vibration is about 10, 15 femtoseconds, but this is not something which will perturb the picture.
But it's of the same order as these oscillations.
Let's say the CC stretch normally is something like, I think that around 20 something femtoseconds. Yeah. So the nuclear dynamics will start to perturb the picture significantly, let's say after 20 or after 15, if you say, femtoseconds. But the first part will be more or less what we'll see.
But wouldn't it, I mean, as you said, it's a very high energy states.
Yeah.
Now, they, however, are in detect continuum. So they would just ionize, and therefore the signal would go away on a very short time scale. So because you assume a discretized wave packet, mm-hmm. in reality, all the components in the ionization continuum will just...
Presumably he has it in there.
Yeah, but he describes them discretized.
Yeah,
he gets a wave packet, which of course oscillates forever.
Well, but that,
because those states remain discrete.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Is how dense that discretization is. Okay, because one has to check as to how the results persist as you make the continuum denser and denser.
Sure. Yeah.
You are in a box, I suppose, right? Yeah.
And the we didn't put a box. We are in a basis function. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that's what I'm trying to say. That this is a loss mechanism, which is a dumping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem was that he was always referring to the vibrational motion. This is why I wanted to sharpen the visualization, which is now relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. This part is still under preparation. I started to write the paper here, so I'll put even the KITP in the address.
on the emission stuff. Question, since yeah. that issue was open, and let me first say, before I say what I'm going to ask, I like the Q expression very much, and it's a logical extension of the Seidelbaum-Gesellschaft work on this area, which extends over many
years. I mean, he's good, so you don't expect that I say something very different from what he's doing.
Yeah. I have some real misgivings about the physics here. I think some essential physics is missing. And to make that into a question, let's remember that years ago, Linus Pauling drew a circle inside a benzene ring and called it conjugation, because you could have in that picture single and double bonds rearranged. Mm-hmm. And actually, soon thereafter, physicists asked, what's the time scale of oscillation of those between those two configurations? And you can calculate that using your formalism. It has nothing to do with photoionization. You just start off in one of the configurations and let it oscillate back and forth, back and forth. And so the question is there any physics in that oscillation? And isn't that exactly what we're kind of looking at here?
No. First, within the formalism that we are using, I mean, I cannot do it because I'm doing this with the Green's function, which describes already a one electron missing. Yeah. So all this difference here for me is taken automatically. I have the difference. I have the eyepiece. I have everything with the diagonalizing or just propagating with the Hamiltonian built in this ISR representation, if I do that.
In which case you can simply describe ionization with benzene minus, and you will have perfectly better solution.
Yeah, then the problem will be that all codes which we have work only with a closed shell with benzene minuses, yeah?
Minus gone, the electron is gone, this was the idea.
Yeah, but I have to start with a closed shell. Then I can remove an electron from...
Look, we are not talking about technicalities here, right?
Yeah, in principle, yeah.
But what does that mean? I'm just enjoying the question. What does your... the problem is really what does your initial state mean? We all understand that if you prepare something, initial state, which is not an eigenfunction of a Hamiltonian, then of course there will be time dynamics, so there will be some oscillations, we understand that.
Yeah.
So the real question is, how realistic your initial state? That's I think, the same question, right?
Yeah, but so of course there is always a problem of the initial state. So that the fact that we start from a single Hartree Fock orbital is that this is the simplest and the most obvious thing for us to do. But the whole machinery works if I start with any sort of initial state, which I can describe, not with a single Hartree Fock molecular orbital, but with linear combinations of many. So in principle, if you tell me what kind of initial state you prepare with your certain pulse, I can start the propagation and tell you what's going on, and then I can be quantitative.
Yeah, but if I know which initial combination I prepare with my pulse, I already know what the dynamics is.
I'm not so sure.
I know the states.
I'm not so sure.
I know where the energies and over relative phases. So I know the answer. So.
No, it depends how you describe the so-called ionic core that in most of the cases people forget, in at least in this community, because they're dealing or more interested in what's happening with the electron going out. Yeah, which for me in this case was in a sense irrelevant. So I suppose that it's already gone, and I want to see what's happening inside the system.
Look, the experiment. If you prepare the initial state with a photon, right?
Yeah.
So it has certain energy. It may have certain bandwidth. In this case, it probably doesn't matter. So it has certain energy, which means that if you prepare some fixed combination of eigenstates of your cation with utero cross sections, which happen to be at this particular energy, and with some combination of relative initial phases.
Mm-hmm.
So that combination will have absolutely no relation to your Hartree Fock pulse. Because it would be a combination of eigenstates already, and all the dynamics which will happen after that will not involve any frequencies.
No, you will
it's
have
not accessible.
But look, what I'm.
It will not.
No.
I'm sorry. Yeah. What we're discussing here is, I mean, this problem is, let me call it the evolution or the decay of a prepared state.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, even spontaneous emission, the standard problem. To spontaneous emission to be meaningful, you assume that you can prepare the system in that eigenstate before the decay starts. Okay? Now, what you say is, of course, very important. Because you may not be able to prepare the system. That's correct. But at least he gave a recipe. He said that I assume my system has been prepared in that eigenstate, and I work from there.
So
what you're saying is that in reality,
I mean, I can claim that the time quantitative, if you prepare this initial state, and I can be quantitative if you give me a particular initial state. Say, I come with my pulse and I prepare this initial state, this fall. Yeah.
Maybe I should add something. Here, the idea is to remove the electron fast. Okay? So if your pulse is such that you can remove your electron fast, which I don't know, but you have to think about it. 20 years ago, if you would have said attosecond pulses, people would have tell you, what are you talking about? There are no attosecond pulses.
No, but the electron
can be faster than
the inverse energy of your photon which removes it.
Yes.
So you will never access any states which have energy deeper than that. That's the whole thing.
Yeah,
your
that's
electron,
what I said.
Which, if you remove the electron with a photon of, let's say, even 50 eV, okay,
yeah,
you populate this molecule, it's about, let's say, 5,000 states.
And
in principle, it's quite conceivable that because of, if you do it in very short time, of course you populate a Koopman state. So it's also physical. Of course, I don't know whether such short times can be achieved in experiment in the next 10 years, I don't know. But like Peter says, here the question is, if I do that and that, this is the result. Okay, so to experiment, of course, I have to hope that some experimentalists will make advances and be able to do it one day.
Okay. Yeah.
to this discussion, I would say, as soon as one can observe where is the hole, one can also start to do pulse shaping. I mean, one can do some evolutionary scheme to modify pulses. But I have an additional question. In some of your graphs, you showed an attosecond evolution, which was not periodic. So your periodic starts at some after some attosecond dynamics. What is that?
This is related to the to the question that I start with a particular Hartree-Fock orbital, and what and then suddenly the correlation with the other electron starts. So at time zero, I have no correlation. I have removed one electron from a particular single hole state or single particle state, and then I have a multi-electron, many electron dynamics. So what happens in this, let's say, actually this drop you can see, which is about, let's say, 9-10% of the hole, which goes in about 50 attosecond. This is the time scale of the electron correlation. This is the time scale when the electrons talk to each other. So there is a nice PRL by Lenz and Jörg Breitbach, one of those guys here, discussing exactly this problem. And this is that you have every electron, of course, travels with its exchange correlation hole. So telling the other electrons, I'm here, I have this spin, this energy, and so on. So not the other guy cannot have the same stuff in the same place. So, but when you suddenly remove it, this is the time scale when the other electrons need to realize that this electron is missing. So, and that's, and in the case of the decay, because this is already what we populate here, already decaying state, then this very big and fast particle hole excitation is actually describing the response of the system to this sudden removal of an electron.
But that's not screening, I mean, because that would be on a longer time scale.
No, it's not a screen.
It's not screening, but since it's a small system, screening is not like in a metal or something. Like only the next electron, so to say, is
screening.
If you want very local screening.
So, Lenz, this is a good physical question, but I think in this Swanism, these timescales you're looking at would be called the Poincaré recurrence. Timescales.
You can call it.
Thinking of Peter's example of spontaneous decay, if you look in Wigner-Weiss growth, if you're not careful, you can get no decay and oscillation, which is the Poincaré recurrence time. And they figured out how to get the full, what we would call radiation damping in the system in an ad hoc way. The same question comes up in vibrational relaxation in big molecules where you prepare a localized state. So this is a good first start on an issue, but I think something's still missing here. And I'm not quite sure about this theorem that the correlation dynamics itself is telling you anything really meaningful in terms of a time scale. It's like Pauling's configurations of looking at the oscillation. The two of them, and that's why I kept asking about this omega t business, those frequencies, time scales that are determining what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I fully get the question, or it was more probably a comment. So, just to move.
What's happening at 100 femtoseconds here? Why does it suddenly get fuzzy?
No, it's just that it's a different time scale. So then you go to femtoseconds. And all those oscillations are things like that if you blow it up. Yeah.
Similar problems have been in optics of semiconductors about 15 years ago, where people also started by immediately creating some population in the, let's say, conduction band, and then looking at the decay of this build-up of correlation and relaxation. And of course, you also then have some femtosecond and sub-femtosecond processes. But everything which is on a time scale, which is so short that you have to question that you are able to create your state in such a short time. is sure. Doubtful.
Yeah, yeah, sure. No.
Next step, what you have to do is think of a realistic way to create this initial state. That means think about a realistic pulse of whatever.
We're working on that. Yeah. We're working on that.
That all this initial phase will change because your states already start to relax during the exit.
But why should I follow the experimenters? Why not the other way around? ICD was the same. When we predict ICD, it took nearly 10 years before there was the first experiment.
You are free to do an Gedanken experiment. It has to be some pulse.
Yeah, a delta. If you take a delta in time, delta pulse, with a normal dipole, this is what you get. Of course, you can question whether they can have a delta pulse in the next 10, 20 years. Okay, but I know what's happening if I remove something.
It's a bit faster, and the pulse has to be faster than any of the oscillations they want to look at. If that pulse doesn't exist, Really, you know, what I talked about, the spontaneous emission, is very relevant. If I take spontaneous emission, what do we say? We have the system in the excited state, and then we watch it decay. The Weisskopf approximation, so it assumes that you have prepared the system much faster than 1 over gamma. Now, if you cannot do that, and a classic case where you cannot do that is the driven spontaneous emission. If you now drive this with a laser, again you have spontaneous emission. But now you have to put the excitation in the treatment. Okay? And then, of course, you have the triplet, the system split in response. That's exactly what it is here. So maybe at some point one has to keep the excitations. But as long as that condition is, it's
okay. Yeah, but it would be really interesting to start in the initial hole, but then delete over all the interactions, the states which are not accessible by energy, and see what will happen to the initial.
We partly did it, but in the time propagation it's just more difficult. We did it when he showed the formula where you expand in the eigenstate.
There you have it.
You can do it, but in these molecules, you cannot diagonalize the Newtonian.
In most of the examples that I showed, we can filter and use filter diagonalization. This we did.
At least those like emission at like 60 eV in the harmonic emission will disappear automatically.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, if there are no more questions, thanks.